The big variable for me is now the insecurity. I can see the change. I can see governments investing in the right structural questions. I can see the World Bank investing in the right structural questions. I can see the marketplace responding to some of these issues with new insurance products and so forth.
Insurance products for climate change.
Yeah, for example. Yeah, very exciting. But the great threat that I can see today, that I underestimated 18 months ago, is conflict, is war. We have literally added over 1 million new displaced people to our books in the last 12 months. It's northeast Nigeria, it's northern Mali, where the peace process is very precarious. But even beyond the Sahel, these are Sahel countries, Central African Republic, which is, you know, everyone is aware of the conflict there. What they don't realize is that the 300,000 refugees that have fled that country have fled into the Sahel. They've fled to Chad. They've fled to Cameroon seeking sanctuary. So we have also along the borders of the Sahel, whether it's Darfur in Sudan or Central African Republic, people fleeing to this very precarious part of the world for sanctuary. And to our north, we have Libya, which is continuing to be catastrophic. So it's a neighborhood where even governments with the best of intentions and with the right policies kind of coming into place are dealing with a very hostile policy-making environment. You've got to be pretty kind of sympathetic to that. So to answer your question, I see lots of possibilities. I'm very worried today about the threats to these governments and their ability to make policy and have sufficiently stable prolonged period to see results.
We hear from other humanitarian actors in the region who've been there as long as you have. They've said that further crises are just inevitable. And despite the need for drought-resistant crops and better rural infrastructure and irrigation techniques, we've got a booming population. I think Niger had a population of 2 million in 1950. It's due to be 50 million by 2050. We've got creeping desertification going south. I mean, this region, the Sahel nine countries, is difficult to live in at the best of times, and it's not getting any easier. So how do you address that?
Well, on these chronic problems, you, as an emergency guy, you don't kid yourself that you can fix the structural issues behind these numbers. So you're absolutely right. We are saving lives every day with our emergency response. We are treating millions of acutely malnourished children. We are providing food assistance to literally millions of households, providing agricultural support to millions of farmers to try and reduce the need for them to have food support the following year. We are saving lives every day. But behind these numbers, as you say, are chronic issues to do with climate change adaptation, to do with investment in water, to do with population growth. So what do you do? Firstly, you don't kid yourself that you're going to solve it with an emergency toolbox. Secondly, you turn to the people who have to take responsibility for it. And these are the governments of the region. They are the only ones with the authority, the legitimacy, and the ability to scale up the response to these solutions. So you turn to these governments and you turn to their development partners, the World Bank, the UN Development Programme, the FAOs of this world, to make sure that while we save lives this year and probably next year, we buy time for those structural issues to be addressed.
Going back to the governments, and you may have seen in the news that Sani Abacha's, some of his funds that he'd squirreled away in Europe have now been released, and they're going to be monitored by the World Bank. Do we need the World Bank to continue to monitor this kind of development aid, or can we not hand over more and more responsibility to the governments?
We have to hand over more and more responsibility to the governments. This is absolutely the only way to take to make sure that there's a national response. These countries need, for example, a proper social protection program, a safety net, because of the vulnerability of the climate, the population growth and so forth. This cannot be administered by the UN or by the World Bank or by NGOs. This needs to be done on a national scale. There is no substitute for a government to do that, that no one else can do it. So the issue is not, is the money going to get squirreled away? The issue is, how do you make sure the resources are available and that those resources get to where they need to get to? We need governments, of course, to take responsibility. And these countries need their own monitoring and checks and balances. And we're seeing them, countries like Senegal and so forth, you know, with various processes to reduce corruption. The problem is there, though. I'm not going to pretend it isn't.